Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Catherine Mowbray Lawrence. I'm your host today for the Powerful Communicator radio show. And our topic today is leadership communication, especially for emerging women. And our leading lady today is Grace Judson. Her company is the same name, and we're so excited to welcome you to the show. Hello, Grace. Welcome.
Thank you. I am delighted to be here. This is going to be fun.
Grace has a vision of a world where people wake up looking forward to their workday because their jobs are meaningful, interesting, challenging, and even exciting. Her big question is, what if work was more fun? Not just livable, not just bearable, fun. Work shouldn't suck. The corporate life shouldn't be a rat race. It starts with the first line manager and leader, and 60% of those new leaders shouldn't fail in their first year. Drawing on 25 years of corporate experience, including 16 years of executive leadership, plus 15 years of training and coaching fledgling leaders, Grace works with first-line managers and leaders to help them create meaningful, enjoyable, high-paying careers as they learn the skills most in demand by the companies they work for. So, Grace, in the intro, we talked about, you mentioned 60% of those new leaders shouldn't fail in their first year. Is that a statistic, a viable statistic?
Unfortunately, yes, it is. I have done a fair number of research on this, a fair amount of research on this, because it's really, it's a stunning statistic. It's tragic and it's massively expensive, both for, obviously, for the individuals, but also for the organizations they work for.
So what do you think is the primary failure or the primary cause of failure? That is a stunning statistic, as you said.
I think it is predominantly because we are not supporting these people enough. The emerging leader within organizations is often identified as a high performer as an individual, but then we also promote people who are not necessarily identified in that as part of that group. And what happens is these people have been individual contributors, as we call them in the corporate world, and they have spent their careers doing tasks. Doing, you know, what they've been told to do. They've been given a task list, a to-do list, and they've done it. And they have been rewarded because they have done this task or that task or these tasks well. But management and leadership is not about executing on tasks. It is not that black and white. There's a lot more strategy involved. There's a lot more gray area involved. But we do not prepare these people to make that leap, to cross that gap. And I think that is where things break down. As a population, the first-line manager, supervisor, leader, whatever you want to call them, do not get a proportional amount of training finances. They don't get the budget that the more senior leaders do. And yet, in my view, if we were to allocate some of that budget to them, we would be paving the way for them to be the leaders that their organizations need them to be, without having to unlearn bad habits or without having that 60% failure rate.
So we're not really empowering them with the tools and resources that they need to take that leap from, say, first line greeter in a medical office or receptionist to perhaps assistant manager or office manager. So you've mentioned a few things, including training. What other resources and should we in corporate America give to these emerging leaders, because they're the new wave of leaders coming forth? It's imperative that we support them, right? So what would you recommend?
It is absolutely imperative that we support them, because we are in a situation, and I'll answer your question in a second, but I just want to emphasize that point. We're in a situation where senior leadership, baby boomers, are, after many years of saying they were going to retire, they now are retiring in ever-increasing numbers. And it is not easy to hire right now. The hiring market is very tight, as we all know. So it is really tough to bring in people at the kind of level and with the kind of expertise and skill that one would want at a mid-level and senior level management and leadership position. So this question of prepping people to be the leaders of the future is crucial for organizations to succeed. The support they need training, but they also need implementation support. I think we have all been in that situation where we've gone to a conference or a workshop or a weekend program or whatever it might be, or even read a book. And then we think this is, you know, the best thing since sliced bread, and it's a great idea, and we can't wait to actually start using it. But then we get back to the office, we sit down at our desk, and it's like, okay, how do I actually make this work in my situation, in my environment, with the people that I am working with? And that implementation leap from concept into practice also requires support, whether it's going out and finding yourself a mentor or multiple mentors, because I really think more than one is a good thing, to get different perspectives, or to get coaching support, or to be part of what you might call a mastermind or a support group of other people who are working on the same sort of thing. There are options, and people don't have to go it alone. You don't have to be, you know, I think we dump these people into the deep end of the pool, but there are options out there for support. And one of the crucial things about getting support is to acknowledge, first off, that you're not alone in this, that if you feel confused and uncertain and maybe even a little bit of imposter syndrome going on, that's normal, and to reach out for help, you know, in these ways that I have suggested, or whatever, you know, comes to mind for you.
You make some excellent points, and I love your reference to the imposter syndrome, which Amy Cuddy brought to light. There's probably been other authors as well, but she brought it to light in her book, and I just thought it was an amazing TED Talk, first of all, and an amazing book. And I, this, the title escapes me. Do you remember what it is, Grace? The Amy Cuddy book on the
I do not. I'm sorry.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I have it in my bookcase, but I can't quite see it from here. But everybody, if you're listening, listen to the TED Talk, Amy Cuddy. It's really fantastic, and you can certainly Google her book. It's well worth it. So you make another good point, Grace, where you said that the baby boomers are aging and we're retiring, and I put myself in that category. And so there's a vast exodus from corporate world of maybe mid-level managers, as well as directors and even C-suite leaders, who are exiting the workplace because of their age. So it is absolutely, you know, so important for that infrastructure to be brought into corporate America. Now, is that, are corporations realizing that they need to do that? And have you found some companies that you're working with that do go ahead and put some infrastructure into place, such as a mentorship program on site, you know, with their colleagues who are more experienced or have more wisdom than they do, perhaps. You've mentioned mastermind groups, which I love those because those meet you where you're at and take you to the next step and help you through the gap. But so what is your finding when you go out and you do your training and coaching in our country, in America? What are you finding that companies are putting into place, and are they doing it successfully, and do they recognize that they need to do that? Sorry, that's a lot of questions at once.
Well, yeah, and the answer is kind of sort of maybe. I think that one of the interesting things about doing this kind of work is that the organizations that are open to it are already doing at least some of it. And the organizations that don't think that they need to pay attention to this are less open to even talking about it. And they're, of course, the ones that most need to be doing something about it. I have done work with some companies that are doing some very good programs. They're implementing some very good programs with their emerging leaders. I just did a couple of workshops, for instance, for a company a little north of where I am, which is doing what they call the Emerging Leader Academy, and it's a three-year program. They put a cohort through every year. The challenge here is, you know, 65% of CEOs, I'll throw some more statistics at you here, believe that bench strength, which I mentioned earlier, developing the next generation of leadership, 65% of the CEOs in this particular study believed that it was a top concern, and 60% of them didn't think that they were doing enough to address the problem. So there is an awareness, but there isn't always the, how do I want to put it, the will, the impetus to actually take action on it. I think that strategic action is often backburnered because there is less of an urgency around it. And then when people bump into the urgency, then they wake up and it may be too late. One of the things that I really hope to do with my work is to make support available on an individual level. So, you know, we talk about, are the organizations doing enough? And I would say, you know, that's why I said it's kind of sort of maybe. Some are, some aren't. But we are all responsible for our own careers. And that is something that I think very often, are the individuals doing enough to take ownership? And yes, it would be great if their organizations, their employers, were offering these tools to them, these resources. But if they're not being offered, first off, ask, because you never know what might be available unless you ask. And secondly, look out there and see what you can do for yourself, because ultimately it comes down to your career and your success, however you want to define that. But if you don't take ownership of it and you wait for it to come to you, then you might wait a very long time.
Yes, I mean, self-motivation is so important. And I remember being in a workshop decades ago where someone said, you know, here I am speaking to you, I'm a motivational speaker, but I can't really motivate you. I can inspire you to perhaps move or lose weight or run in the 5K or take a speaking course, but I can't actually motivate you. So if you're not motivated within yourself to be the best that you can be at whatever stage of career development you're at, that's so important. And I just looked up the book that I was talking about. Amy Cuddy's book is simply called Presence. And it's an excellent book. So that I would recommend to your point, Grace, of something that somebody could read and listen to her TED Talk to see how they possibly might be able to enhance and improve skills that they already have, and perhaps to raise awareness of some skills that they could build that they don't currently have.
Yes. there's some very, I like that you're talking about skills, and I'd like to make the point that there's a differentiation here between talent, which is something that we're born with, and skill, which is something that we develop. And I'm drawing a blank on her first name, but her last name is Duckworth, and the book is called Grit. And she makes the point that talent times skill equals talent times skill is, okay, you know what? Give me 2 seconds and I will have the answer to that, because I want to make sure I get this right. But the point is that we all have a certain level of talent, and we all have the capacity to develop skill. So here it is, talent times effort. I knew I wasn't getting it right. Talent times effort is skill. So no matter what level of talent you have for any of these leadership skills or anything else, the more effort you put in, the greater your skill will be. And then skill times effort is achievement. So it is a continuum that you have the capacity to develop. Nobody, as you said, Catherine, nobody can develop it for you, but you can develop it if you have the will to do it, to go out and find the ways to do it and to motivate yourself.
I love that, Grace. I think that, you know, that's another author we can look for if we're interested in developing ourselves, self-development. You also, with your programs, tell us a little bit about the Leadership Launchpad. That's your own program.
The Leadership Launchpad is actually a free workshop, and I promote it using the hashtag not a webinar, because there are so many webinars out there. This is a free workshop. It is online. It is interactive and live. It's not something that I record for people to listen to later, because you need to be there and talk to me about what it is, where you are on your leadership journey, and where you feel like you need support. I run it roughly every 2 weeks, and so you can find it on my website and sign up for it there. It is an entry point into a 10-week empowered leadership group program that I offer that really does give the kind of support that we've been talking about, learning plus interaction with other people, so you have the mastermind effect, plus hands-on help from me to implement what you've learned in your specific environment with the challenges that are coming up for you with the situations that you're encountering.
And just to reiterate what Grace's website is, it's gracejudson.com. That's where you can find more information about her work and the Leadership Launchpad. And Judson is spelled J-U-D like David, S like Sam, O-N, gracejudson.com. She also has a best-selling book called The 5 Deadly Shoulds of Office Politics, which you can find on Amazon. And I'm sure you have a link to that on your website as well, right, Grace?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a short but punchy little book that people have said has really made a difference for them in understanding how to navigate that thing that we often love to hate, but which is a reality within the corporate world, no matter what organization you work for. So thank
You've
you for mentioning that.
You're very welcome. You're giving us some very keen nuggets, and I don't want people to miss out, especially when they are interested in bettering themselves and learning. Now, I don't know about you, but I actually have on my LinkedIn profile, I have some sort of opening or invitation that if people need career advice or coaching, perhaps a couple of sessions, that I have that available to people who want some career advice. Typically, they see my background in tourism, hospitality, and healthcare. And they may be in that background and they want to develop perhaps their speaking skills or move out of their corporate job and become in professional speaking or trainer. So that's also another possibility for those of you who may be listening who wish to take the next step in your career, especially for emerging leaders. And so that could also be available, is just check out LinkedIn and see who has a background that might resonate with you or appeal to you, and see if you can get some counseling, or not counseling, that's the wrong word, coaching, as to help support you. Now, Grace, you've also mentioned another a book to me when we've talked previously that you really enjoy and that would be a good recommendation for the listeners. It's by Voss, and it's called Never Split the Difference, Negotiation, Like Your Life Depends on It. Do you have any comments about that?
I jump up and down and wave my arms around about this book all the time. It is a fascinating read. Christopher Voss currently has he has his own negotiation and training and consultancy organization right now, but he was the lead international hostage negotiator for the FBI. And the book has some fascinating stories about his experiences, you know, doing that. And that's why he calls his book Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It, because he actually did that for people when he was with the FBI. I recommend this book not just from the standpoint of negotiation, but also from the perspective of any kind of communication or conflict. Or his tools are counter to what a lot of so-called best practice is with negotiating and conflict work, and they are really effective. I have used his work personally. I have used his work with clients and helped them with negotiations. I had one client who was negotiating a very tricky situation with a colleague who wanted to buy out of their partnership. And the process that we used was based on some of Voss's work, and was able to come to a resolution that they were both comfortable with and even happy with, and was far removed from where the negotiation opened. So the stories are just terrific, because, of course, who doesn't love a good hostage crisis success story?
I do. I love those, especially when it's a success story. So, Grace,
exactly.
I know that. So we are on Women Lead Radio, and my show is The Powerful Communicator, as you know. But I know that you don't only work with women, you work with men as well. What challenges do women and men face perhaps differently in the workplace in their communication? And what attributes, if any, does each gender bring to the powerful communication in the workplace?
That is a great question. It's interesting, because I was on a panel at a women's conference here last year that was it was literally called He Said, She Said. And I think we're more and more aware of the ways in which women don't always stand up for themselves, don't promote themselves effectively. Quite a few years ago, a long time ago, thank goodness, and hopefully it's no longer being perpetrated, but I was at a conference where there were women CEOs and startup founders on the stage on a panel, and one of them said that, hey, you know, just go out there and do your best and work hard, and people will notice and you will get rewarded and promoted. And I about leapt out of my seat. You know, I managed to restrain myself from leaping up and shrieking, no, because this is something that men do well and women don't always do well. We've been talking about books. There's a couple of books. One is called Women Don't Ask, and their follow-up was Ask For It. It's by Linda Badcock and Sarah Lashever. Women are known for not asking for the promotion or the job unless they believe they can do it about 110%. Men will ask for it if they think they can only do about 50 or 60%. So as women, we need to be more confident in putting ourselves forward to take advantage of opportunities without thinking that we, quote unquote, should just be recognized. You mentioned my book earlier. That's one of the five deadly shoulds. Or that we are just going to be given it by virtue of the hard work. The other thing, though, on the flip side of that, they're starting to see, and I wish I had some statistics on this, but I don't at the moment. I know they're out there. They're starting to see that companies with women on the board of directors, for instance, have a statistically significant better bottom line year in and year out. Women leaders have, you know, you and I are both in the baby boomer generation. It used to be they told us to go out and lead like a man. But women leaders are shown to have some qualities and characteristics that can make them, in certain situations, better leaders than men. Again, I wish I had the actual statistics on this and the case studies. I'm afraid I don't, but it's out there if you go look for it. So what I would say ultimately, without turning this into a multi-book answer here, is leverage your strengths, whether you're a woman or a man. Understand who you are as a leader. Understand that there is not a leadership rule book. There are certain skills and characteristics that are important, but as we talked about earlier, you can develop skills and be who you are rather than trying to contort yourself into what you think a leader, again, to use the should word, quote unquote, should be. Because we all have our own style and way of being a good leader. And I think it's really important to understand for yourself. Self-awareness is one of the key characteristics of leadership.
Absolutely. I'd just like to throw another book into the mix while we're talking about it. It's How Women Sabotage Their Success in Business According to Men. And that's by Michelle Bergquist, who's the CEO of Women Lead. Sorry, she is the CEO of Women Lead Radio, but she is the co-founder and CEO of Connected Women of Influence, How Women Sabotage Their Success in Business According to Men. It's a very good read. It's a simple read, and she interviewed hundreds of men to get the feedback for her book, and I would highly recommend that to people if they're interested. One thing that I have noticed in business, perhaps not so much now, but in recent, maybe 10 years ago and prior to then, is that women were really good about identifying the problems that needed to be solved, but men were better problem solvers. I hope that's not still the case. I hope that the women can put their, you know, thinking caps on and that use their intuitive abilities, their sensitive communication skills, their respectful communication skills, and really get to solving a problem. So solving it with compassion. So we talk a lot about in America, in corporate America, about, you know, skills like engineering, accounting, coding, and things like that. But there's all these other soft skills that you have to incorporate into being a good leader, wouldn't you say, Grace? You know, compassion, respect, presence, being a good speaker. And another thing that I just wanted to get your opinion on as we get ready to close here is body language, because that's an innate part of communication. What do you think about body language in a good leader? No strutting allowed, by the way.
I want to touch really quickly on what you are calling the soft skills. I prefer to call it workplace essential skills. I think that soft skills kind of have a bad reputation, and I have learned something fascinating about that, which is that soft skills actually originally came out of the U.S. Army and referred to skills that did not involve handling machines. Don't have time to go into that, but Google it. It's fascinating.
Okay.
And the other really important one is empathy, what I call professional empathy.
Good.
And again, we don't have time to go into that, but you can look on my website for a lot of writing about that. I think body language is a really interesting question in this era of dispersed teams, where we are not co-located anymore. Increasingly, we have geographically dispersed teams. So the advent of video conferencing is meaning that facial expressions are are part of what we need to pay attention to and look at from the standpoint of culture. But body language, how we stand, how we move our hands, and that kind of thing is becoming less and less a part of the communication toolbox, if you will.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's something that we...
You go ahead. You just finished that thought, and then we need to close.
Right, we need to wrap. I think that's something that we need to pay attention to, really, is all I was going to add.
Perfect. Well, you've given us some wonderful nuggets to think about, Grace. Again, thank you to our wonderful guest, Grace Judson, gracejudson.com. And a special thanks to all of our listeners, both in the United States and overseas. We are an international show, and we are delighted to have you welcome us. Please come again to join another Women Lead radio show every Monday at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. It's been my sincere pleasure to be your host today. Until the next time, may you always communicate with purpose, poise, and power.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.